All right, good evening. Welcome, everyone. Just checking in the volume. Everyone can hear me okay in the room? How about online? All right, good. Anyone new visiting us for the first time? Well, welcome. Welcome. Anyone online who's new? Great. Well, I'll introduce myself for the couple new people. My name's Tim Guile, one of the guiding teachers here at Seattle Insight. All right, so this is the second week, third week on patience. So Tori, I know Carrie and Tori have both given some talks, and Tori will be here next week, and here's my chance to put my voice in about patience. I was reflecting on how that's not really a word we use to define, to describe our culture, that we're really patient, right? Get on I-5, you know, maybe getting here, how that was, just trying to, you know, navigate like I was coming down, whatever that street is over there, Roosevelt, I guess. Ninth, well, not ninth, but the one over. And just, you know, there was a person who wanted to do a crosswalk, so I waited, not overly patiently, but I waited, and there's another person. And just can feel that urgency that can I, let me get on with my life, let me get on with my agenda. And patience is kind of goes contrary to that. So in some ways, it's one of the more important paramis to explore because it is not so supported in our culture. You know, we take, just taking, I mean, how many times in my intro class have I had someone just say, well, it's hard to just take the time to practice because there's so many other things that my life demands upon me. You know, so when do, how do we learn to prioritize really doing nothing? Just simply being still. And how many of you in the room have been on a meditation retreat, a residential retreat, right? And online. I mean, so how do you explain to your friends you're just going to go sit around for 3 days, 5 days, 6 days, you know, 2 months, 3 months? It just doesn't quite make sense. How can you be productive? But yet we start to really value this quality of patience. Now, the paramis, we can look at them many different ways. One is how one leads to another. So last month we explored energy. So an interesting juxtaposition between energy and patience. Why do those go together? And I think patience after energy helps to kind of rebalance ourselves because we can start to have this sense of urgency that comes from wisdom, seeing more clearly. We kind of cleaned off kind of our lives by being more generous, having cleaner ethics, more based in kindness instead of hatred and greed, then we start to have that quieting starts to happen, and wisdom starts to grow from that. From that wisdom, we can have this urgency of energy to practice deeply. And yet, that energy can get a little bit, a little too frenetic, and can be a little bit too tight, too driving. That's why patience perhaps comes after that, to start to rebalance. Particularly that force of will, that sense of I need to get enlightened, I've got to attain something. That energy sometimes has those kind of distortions. Now, with all the paramis, I think it's helpful to also just acknowledge, really in an honest way, any of that shadow we might have around it. So the shadow sides of patience. Mostly these start with the word I should. I should be more patient. I should be more generous. I should be more kind, right? And when we have that sense of shouldness, that we should be something other than we are, we're kind of set up with this inherent conflict with how the moment actually is, with how we actually are, right? And so that's a problem. And we can use something like patience to actually create more suffering for ourselves. Right, okay, here's another thing I can judge myself about. You know, I thought I was just not being very generous, but now I'm not patient either. That's another perfection that I'm imperfect on. How so easily it ties into these familiar habits of self-criticism, of self-judgment. You know, if only I was a better person, a better practitioner. If I really had it together as a meditator, I would be so patient. You know, it wouldn't be a problem. But yet here I am struggling with traffic and with people trying to use the crosswalks and all those things. I was reading a novel, and there's a line that said that perfection is the mortal enemy of good enough. right? That sense of perfection. We got to get it perfect, you know? And so that attitude sometimes slips in with all these paramis, and patience is no different. And so when we find ourselves in a moment that we're feeling that urgency or that sense of impatience or that sense of, I want to get on with something. I want to get through this. I want this to be done quicker. You know, all that impatient quality. And we recall, okay, I'm actually trying to practice here. And patience comes up. That's a really important moment to notice how we work with it, how we are with it. Because on one hand, we can either work with it skillfully or unskillfully. Unskillfully is easy to tie into that inner critic. Okay, I'm not good enough. I should be more patient. How can I practice patience? How can I, you know, get this attention deficit mind to not be so distracted? How can I fix this and that about myself? And again, this is a really fundamental disallowing of how this moment is. Because we started the meditation today, just that willingness to connect with how the sound is in the room, how the sound's outside, how this breath is arising. If you can learn this, it's a very simple thing. It's easier to kind of overlook. We want something a little bit more jazzy, a little more exciting, more bells and whistles. But to simply instead learn to cultivate this capacity of meeting this moment and allowing it to be just how it is, that can go very, very, very deeply in the Dharma. It can take you to some very profound depths. And patience is a great avenue to look at that, to start to notice, what am I not allowing in this moment? Instead of using it as a way to confirm our inadequacy, how we're never good enough. Because if we can't connect with how the moment actually is, we're trying to relate to really our mind's interpretation of it. Even worse, where we think how we should be, we're focusing on that aspect instead of really meeting this moment. Okay, I'm feeling impatient. What is that like? And we feel like if I was more critical of myself, somehow I'd become more patient. Anyone have much luck with that strategy? So if we can start to learn that using patience not as a problem, but actually as a gift, okay, this is actually something I can learn about, I can actually turn toward. Because life gives you lots of times to be impatient, right? If you pay attention, and hopefully during this month you're starting to really bring that to the forefront, this word patience. How is this showing up? How is impatience showing up? I mean, countless times a day you feel that. You feel that lack of time, that wanting to get through. But instead of making it a problem about yourself, it's like, oh, let me learn about how I'm creating suffering, how I'm creating a sense of non-allowing in this moment. You know, our society really is set up opposed to this. I remember when my daughter was just a toddler and we started to take her to like things like preschool or, you know, maybe something at the library where there's a start time, right? And if you, any of those who have children, they don't really care about time, right? It doesn't really matter if it takes 2 hours to get dressed or to have breakfast or to do this. But you're like, okay, we got to get out the door. And I just felt the heaviness of having to impose this time constraint on this young child, this young girl who didn't have that. Who didn't have that sense of definition of time, right? So one of the beauties of practice, giving yourself this dedicated time to practice, is you get to set time outside. You get to say, okay, this period is really for just opening to how things are. Sometimes practice without a timer and just see how it is to relate to life. You go on a retreat and it's like, okay, there's a lot of sitting and walking. You start to be almost forced to open to the timeless. So understanding what's going on in this moment, what's in this whole mind-body system and the emotions, sensations of the body, what is not being allowed. Now, there's a a way, there's a concept we sometimes hear called near enemy. I heard this from Sharon Salzberg, and it's basically something like metta is one of those. That you have metta, and then there's something that's close to metta, but not quite it. It's kind of easy to confuse that. And so like metta, it might be something like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. Thank you, Dave. He was trying to block the sun for me. So like with metta, it could be something like, what is the near enemy with metta? Well, with patience, for example, though, it's something like enduring. I'm going to try to endure this moment. I'm going to wait it out until it's over. I'm going to try to get through this. But it's not, that's not really patience. It's kind of like, I'm going to see if I can outlast it. I'm gonna, you know, be stoic in this situation, waiting for it to be over. You know, being patient, and you're like drumming your foot. Sometimes it feels like endurance. Sometimes it feels like you're just trying to tolerate this moment because you don't have any other choice. Notice that. Just notice how that moment is, okay? I'm just tolerating that. And in that moment of acknowledgement, then you can start to open it to a little bit more fully, as we'll talk about in a moment. It's interesting with patience, because if we're really in a place of wonder and amazement with this moment, there's really no sense. Patience doesn't really even come into the question. You're simply abiding. From the outside, it looks like you're really patient because you're simply being with something, allowing it to go at its own time. But inwardly, you're just like, you're so almost in love with how the moment is arriving, how it's showing up. So let's talk about impatience a little bit. So impatience, you know, for myself, often I find it when I'm dealing with, you know, with maybe another person who's not have the same way of, you know, working or doing things, not going at the same speed, you know, driving, for example, like, why are you going 25 in a 30-mile zone? You know, that kind of, you know, tightness of that. And impatience has a real strong physical sensation. If you tune into it, there's that tightness, that urgency, that it doesn't feel very nice, but there's a, you know, I want to get, if I can just get through these obstacles, then I'll be happy. It's kind of the message that comes through the logic of the mind in that moment. Brings up issues of control, agenda, like I want life to be a certain way. A class that I want to do it someday is looking at different cultural lenses, because America is mostly a white European culture, because really the dominant way of how we tend to do things. Like, for example, we start on time and we end on time. We tend to have a relationship to power differentials. We have a relationship to individual versus collected. All these are assumptions that we have based on our culture. And if you're not from this kind of Western European culture and you're kind of forced into it, it's a form of almost violence to that. Sometimes it's overtly violent, but there's a sense of oppression. There's not that space for you. And this, I always thought this would be a really helpful and interesting Dharma thing to explore, because we really believe it's true. It's like, okay, it's important to be on time. That's an absolute value. And yet that's just part of my conditioning that I'm imposing upon the world. And impatience comes up when the world isn't matching that, when the world isn't meeting and fitting that. Impatient with other people, those perhaps dear and close to us, that they're not learning the lessons as fast as we want them to do. Why do they keep making those mistakes? I had a therapist who once said, you have to let people learn their lessons at their own pace and their own timing. Yes, this is a part of equanimity coming in also, letting people have their own journey, their own expression of their life. Patience, in many ways, is really about connecting with how the moment actually is, actually making direct contact. If we have that kind of near enemy thing going on, we're being with something, but we're kind of enduring it. Okay, I'm going to be with you, but I know you're not going to last very long, that kind of a thing. But we're not really connected with how it is. True patience, I think, has this quality of deep connection. or deeply meeting someone. And so sometimes when I'm able to be in a deeply patient way, there's simply I'm simply open to what this person is expressing, what's coming up for them, what's their life, their story. Letting things unfold at their own timing and pace. I remember around the turn of the century, that sounds like I'm really old, back in, doesn't that, how are you, you should try that phrase. Yeah, back in the turn of the century, the wagon train was going across. Well, it was an interesting time in my life because I had one of my, my dear friends was going to have a child born and they wanted to do it at home. And they had a younger, older child who was maybe 5, 6 years older. And they asked me to actually be kind of his support person. So my job was to hang out with this young man and, you know, do whatever he wanted to do. If he wanted to be there with the birth at home, that's great. If you want to go outside, that would be great. And so I was kind of on call because births come when they do, you know, babies come when they do. So that's part of that patience is when can I, I'll, you know, just kind of allow that to have. It could be much easier if it was scheduled, right? I would know this day, this time, I'll show up. The same time, the exact same period, my grandfather was dying from prostate cancer. And so it's interesting, okay, when is he going to pass? When is this child going to be born? And I was just reflecting on that time, like, wow, both of these are completely outside of my control. Both of those I care about, care deeply about. And yet they have their own time, their own pace. So this is part of what patience comes in, is this realization that things will come at their own time. We can force it, we can try to push it, but as you practice, you hopefully start to find that you become more and more aligned with how things actually are. You start to be willing to just sit back and say, okay, when is this, is it maybe the right time? When is this going to come? It comes at its own pace. Patience also has a healthy amount of compassion mixed into that. Because so often we're impatient with something that's painful. That's, you know, or it's noxious, it's irritating, it's like we can't tolerate it, right? So learning how to have that capacity of turning toward what's painful, turning toward what is hurting with an openness of heart to actually connect with it and ask what is needed. So often with patients, the people we're impatient with, they have their own struggle that they're going through. Sometimes I remind myself, like if I'm driving and I'm running late and I have someone who's driving really slowly, okay, I kind of put myself in their shoes. If I was perhaps their set of conditions, maybe they're older, maybe they're whatever, I can't see as well. Or maybe they just don't have to be anywhere at any particular time. Why do I impose my own agenda upon this person, this complete stranger? So this compassion for what's difficult, what's challenging. You know, so we learn to be patient for ourselves in this expression of being human. It's like we're imperfect beings. We make mistakes, we fall down, we fail. And the more we can turn toward that with compassion, we find that patience often arises with that. It's a companion that arises. Patience also has a healthy amount of wisdom which helps bring a perspective to it. And this part of this is this waiting for things to arise at the same time. I was answering a question on one of these Sangha meetings. Someone was sharing this experience that they had something difficult to say to someone, to, you know, kind of a family dynamic thing to share. And this person realized that if I forced it, actually, I don't know if they said that they forced it, but they just waited to the right time. There's a sense of being patient to see, observe, when is it there? When's the right time to actually share this, the right conditions? So that goes back to that connecting with how things actually are. So you're perceiving things, you're actually in relationship to things. And they can say, okay, maybe now is not the right time to mention this. And then now that time opens up. So patience is that willingness to be in tune, to be in sync with life, instead of trying to force it to our own timing, our own agenda. Now, how can we work with impatience? So when we first thing is to kind of interrupt the conviction of that. What I mean by that is when we feel impatient, it's really convincing that, you know, our agenda is the most important, right? I'm the most important person in the whole world, so I need to get to this place in time. You know, it's a little bit, I'm kind of amping it up, but there's a little bit of that flavor. It's like, I need to get someplace. I get out of my way. So stepping back and just noticing that state of mind, what does the mind feel like when we're impatient? I mean, literally, hang out with that. You should become very familiar with what that feels like. What does it feel like as a body sensation? How does it shape the way we perceive, the way we interpret life? And then from that point, ask yourself, what am I not allowing in this moment? And what is not being allowed in this moment? How do I want this moment to be different than it is? What is my heart not opening to? What am I saying no to? Right? So impatience often has this sense of denial, this pushing away of this moment. Something about myself, about someone else. And just acknowledge that. If we kind of skip over this self-judgment around it, okay, I'm not a good meditator because I'm not being patient. What's actually here? And what am I not allowing? And that's such a powerful technique, is when we just say, okay, what am I not allowing? What am I saying no to? What am I pushing away? As I do that, there is sometimes the whole thing opens up, the whole thing falls away because we're no longer resisting it. Narayan Libenson, when she was here, I think the year before, she did a retreat on basically on meditative questions, on investigation. And she said she used this one phrase, is there another moment that's better than this one? For like a whole year, she would just use that to practice. Impatience, from that perspective, yes, of course there's a better moment than this, right? But if we actually look at that, okay, what's this moment can only be how it actually is. And we sort of start to open to that, start to actually enjoy how this moment actually is. Now, what's the beliefs, the emotions behind this impatience? As we do this, we also start to see, sometimes it takes into places we don't really like to go, like we start to see our arrogance. In that sense of, if I was really honest, I would feel like I'm the most important person on the road now. Everybody needs to get out of my way. You know, I need some of those motorcycle cops escorting me down the freeway like the president or something like that. And as you check that, as you notice that, if it can force you to realize, okay, maybe I just have a limited perspective. This is actually really a significant piece to do because it shifts us from that self-focus, that limited sense of who I am, to, okay, maybe someone else has a different belief. Like we could do a survey with everyone here online and here in person and just ask, you know, a few things in different points. Like, okay, what do you believe is this or that? And we'll probably find a lot of different opinions, different ideas. And we could argue about that, or we could simply relax into that, realize, okay, we have different perspectives. So impatience, and patience is a practice of learning to allow that, to meet that other person, you know, where they are, find a way to dialogue with them. And then working with patience, we can start to see, can I relax with how this moment actually is? Relax with non-resistance. This word non-resistance, I think, is such a helpful way of relating to experience. The hindrances, you know, those familiar ones of aversion and craving and sloth and torpor and restlessness and worry and doubt, these things come up. We see them so often in our meditation practices. We can almost see some of those track over with the paramis. Like, for example, when you're feeling that sense of aversion, bringing a sense of metta, of loving kindness to that, bringing a quality of generosity, of non-harm to that expression. When you're feeling that sense of craving, that sense of greed, bringing generosity. And patience can map around, can connect with when we're feeling that restlessness, that sense of worry, especially when that's kind of a secondary hindrance. What I mean by that is I think sometimes restlessness and worry can be just a thing that arises in our system. Sometimes it's kind of a secondary hindrance. Let's say I'm really wanting something and I'm not getting it. I can get really restless about it, right? I can get that sense of agitation. So it's kind of like giving myself a multiple hindrance attack as I'm exploring that, as I'm starting to see that. So when you're practicing and you're feeling, okay, I'm meditating and I just feel like I have to get up, I can't sit anymore, you know, my world's going to end if I don't just, you know, go watch TV or something. See if you can just open to that experience of restlessness, a sense of worry, with a quality of patience. See if you can bring patience to counterbalance that, to bring a sense of ease around it. So this can take a very physical form, like physically relaxing in the body, relaxing the tension around it, relaxing that urgency. It can take a mental capacity as they relax the mind states and how the mind keeps pushing, wanting something different. Emotionally, you know, can I relax with that? I think that's one of the things with our practice that I think it's good to pay attention to. Because it's such an internal practice that we don't often get feedback how things are going, how well we're doing it. For many years, I practiced the martial art of Aikido, which if you're familiar with it, there's lots of kind of blending with people's energy, and you know, someone attacks you, instead of fighting or pushing against it, you blend with that, right? So there's non-resistance that's kind of baked into that. And it's baked in a way that you get direct feedback if you collide with someone. If you push against them as they're attacking you, then you get tense and then the whole thing goes downhill from there. But if you're able to stay relaxed and centered, you can blend with that. Sometimes I reflect in our Dharma practice, in the strictest sense, we don't get that feedback in that same way. They can be sitting there and meditating and really fighting with the fact of this mind state, fighting with this experience. But outwardly, we don't get that feedback. We don't fall down, or we don't get someone to push us over in that same way. Maybe that's why, you know, Zen has that tradition of giving a little tap if you're falling asleep. But see if you can kind of tune yourself to noticing when you're resisting this moment and start to connect that resistance with suffering, with this not allowing. Or question that, is that connected? The more I resist this moment, does that decrease my suffering or increase my suffering? Just kind of check it out for yourself. And you start to realize that becomes our feedback mechanism is dukkha. Is dukkha present or not present? So with patience, you know, we start to feel something come up when we're meditating in daily life, to use that as a clue or a cue, I should say, to just pause and pay attention, to open to that experience. Asking those questions, what am I not allowing? What am I pushing away? How does the body feel? What's the mind state? This whole array can start to open up for us. And finally, patience, all this exploring around patience becomes much more natural, the way that it arises, much more accessible, the less firmly we believe in this sense of self. Right? So being impatient, if you notice how the sense of self reacts to that, it really likes being impatient. Right? It's what I mean by likes, it's really formed. It's really solid. It's solidified. You're identified, you really know who you are when you're impatient, right? I don't want this, I want to be doing this faster. Why is this taking so long, right? Your sense, step back and notice that sense of you is much stronger in that experience. It's much more established in that experience. And other times, when you are not so invested in the sense of self, when there's a background stillness that you seem to fade into, that sense of you and everything else starts to become less defined. Patience actually becomes a natural state. It becomes more of this natural perfection of of the dripping AC unit. So as that sense of self starts to become thinner, also start to notice that. Okay, so bring that into another lens of working with patience and impatience. If you're sitting and practicing and you feel that sense of stillness, that sense of deep presence, there's not a sense of anything needs to be changed in this moment, that sense of self is much thinner. It's much less defined. Noticing how patience is not so hard in that moment. You know, connect that dot. Other times when you're feeling really impatient, just step back. Where am I? I'm right here in the middle of this emotion. I'm right here in this middle of this belief. So working with patience can actually be a profound way of working with this identification around self. And related to that is the sense of timelessness. Patience and time, we can kind of track those. That when we're really time-bound, like with my trying to impose my agenda upon my 3-year-old daughter, like, well, you've got to get to preschool, you know, suffering arises from that. When the sense of self falls away, timelessness comes forth. In timelessness, patience, there is no patience because we're simply abiding. There's nothing that needs to be changed. In some ways, it's the perfection of patience itself. So bring patience into your daily life. Really start to notice that. Don't judge yourself if you're impatient. Use it as a chance to learn about yourself. Start to learn about this landscape of suffering in all its different ways. Make it not an intellectual exercise, but really something you feel in your bones. You feel in your emotions, in your cells of your body. The more you do that, the more embodied you will be with the practice. All right, let's just sit quietly for a couple moments, letting those words settle, and then we'll open to any questions there might be there. All right, so as we open to any questions or sharing you might have online, you can just raise your virtual hand. And in the room, could I have someone who's going to, you know, run the microphone? Yeah, so Cheryl can be the microphone around so we can hear you online. All right, see Deborah.
It's sort of a comment and a question. I had the very unusual to me, because I think of myself as an impatient, restless person, had the very unusual experience of driving home from Portland yesterday. It's a journey that usually takes less than 3 hours, and it took more than 5. Mm. But I didn't feel one shred of annoyance. And that was really surprising. There wasn't anything I could do about the traffic. I didn't feel one bit of annoyance, and I had no other plans that evening. There wasn't anything I had to do. Now I'm thinking, how can I generalize that to the tremendous difficulty that I find day to day of finding even a few minutes to sit and meditate?
Thank you, Deb. Yeah, sometimes That's the practice fruition comes, you know, we don't know when it's going to show up or how it's going to show up. Because, you know, in that driving, I mean, I've been in the same shoes as yours, is that, you know, my expectation of driving time is much shorter than the actual time, but I can't really change it. So sometimes you have to be able just to relax with it. Okay, this is just how life is in this moment. So that kind of quality of patience just, it can arise. Just naturally, and just enjoy that, rejoice in that. Now, in terms of the sense of, okay, how can I find the time? So with your daily practice, you said it's hard to find the little window of time because things are going. So connect with me how that connects to patience, if it does.
I think it does, but I'm not
quite sure. Because that kind of that question of how to practice, I mean, we could look at all the paramis. Each one of those could be part of that. Yeah. You know, it could be so many different windows, but I'm just trying to get a little more accurate with how I respond to you.
Yeah, I think it always has to do with getting on to the next moment. The next moment is more important than the present moment.
Yes, okay, now I see. I can see why that there's the impatience with that. Yes, the next moment is more important than this one. So you might have a little practice of kind of exploring that. Okay, what does it feel like for this next moment to be so important, so vital, right? So as you do that, you know, sometimes I feel that same quality. I'm trying to meditate, but my mind wants to get onto this next thing. That's, okay, I really got to get that done, or I'm looking forward to that, or I'm dreading it, or whatever it might be, but there's a sense of trying to skip over to get to, right? So some ways to play with that and practice with it, you know, one is to kind of just step into the direct experience of it. Okay, what does it feel like to be leaning into the present moment? Sometimes that's enough to shift it. Okay, I'm leading forward. Sometimes it's often because it's so strong, because it's often a mental thing. The mind's telling you, this is less than that, right? This is less of a priority than that. Like I was, actually just this morning, I think I was meditating and I had that, a little bit of that thought. And it's like, okay, what if this was my last day on earth? You know, would I want to spend it connecting with this present moment as deeply as I can? Would I want to do the dishes, you know, or whatever it might be? I mean, maybe it's important to have the dishes done, but there's kind of sometimes bringing that sense of you know, that our life doesn't go on forever. You know, that there's that okay, I want to meet this moment as best I can, as fully as I can. Sometimes there's just a sense of, okay, I'm going to set that aside. I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to let that next thing be in the future. Right now, this is the most important thing that I'm doing, is practicing. Part of it is, too, that the practice, you meditate every day. At the end of a month's daily practice, you don't have this big thing you can look and say, look what I did. You know, you can't say, look at the garden, it's so clean, or look at how well painted this room is. It's like you don't have anything to show for it. So it's kind of this much longer cultivation. It's almost like I know you like to garden. It's almost like you're tilling the soil. You're getting the soil ready for something to grow. And you can't control when the seed's going to drop. You're not going to control when it's going to rise, when it's going to grow. But you can get the soil ready. So it's kind of that preparation and that trust. So there's kind of different elements you can bring into that. The sense of faith, the sense of inspiration, that sense of, you know, reflect on why do you practice? You know, really, what's you mean practicing for a long time? What brings you into the hall? You know, what is that aspiration? Sometimes refreshing that and bringing that to the forefront. Because there is a tyranny of the urgent, right? The urgent can really get in the way of what's the most important for us so many times. So sometimes send that kind of that intellectual reflection can help kind of get the mind to say, okay, I'll give you that time to practice. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Deb. Anyone else? Anyone online or back here in the room? Yes.
I just sat and listened to what you said, and I know, I shouldn't say I know, but perhaps my fear is I will walk out of here and forget everything that you just said. Do you have a couple of little nuggets that I can try to hang on to?
that you can try to...
Try to hang on to.
Oh, hang on to.
To apply patience for the next week.
Well, listening, you know, since we just talked about it, what's three things that you remember from the talk that resonated with you?
I'm going to put me on the spot. Let me think about it.
What's one thing?
Compassion.
Compassion. Okay. So sometimes I think making it simple is really helpful. Because the Dharma is almost like there's so many different, I'm a little rusty in teaching. I haven't taught very much recently. But there's kind of like so many facets to it. All you have to do is get one that you kind of hook onto. It's like, there's this, I don't know why this image came. Have you seen Dune? Like you just have to get one little hook on and then the worm's going to carry you around. So it might be compassion. Might be compassion and patience, okay?
The worm of compassion. I love it.
So when you feel, so compassion and patience, just hold those two words.
Okay.
So when you're finding, just start to maybe write on your refrigerator or someplace you see on your mirror, patience, compassion. And then reflect on that. Just start to notice, okay, I want to see, you know, maybe half the next 2 hours or next even 10 minutes, I want to notice anytime I'm feeling impatient. And when I feel that impatience, I want to bring my heart into it. And that's really it. I could just done a whole talk in 2 minutes like that. Just when you feel impatient, bring your heart to it. Okay, see ya. You know, it can be that simple.
Right.
So that's what's important, is find what's your entry point to it.
Yeah.
You know, I throw out lots of things, kind of hoping some of it's going to land and resonate with people. But sometimes it's too many things. It's like you find something that resonates, that's what's more important.
Perfect.
Because what's vital is for each of us is to find our own entry place into the Dharma, to really embody it, to make it our own, to really understand it. And only you can do that. You can hear the most beautiful talks, and they can be inspiring and so clear, but unless you actually apply it and see it for yourself, that's what matters. So that's what I would suggest, is just those two words, patience and compassion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Cheryl, I'll get another one.
I feel like my impatience is very, very, very connected with my expectations for, and not necessarily craving, but just expectations.
Yeah.
And so would it be wise to let go of expectations?
Yes, but that's kind of like sometimes you have like something sticky on your hand, like, okay, I'm going to let go of it, and it sticks to another part of me. You know, so often with something like expectations, I think it's actually more skillful to not just let go of it, because usually we don't fully let go of it. It comes back. It's like being a dry drunk. We haven't really done our 12 steps, so we don't really understand the impact of our actions of addiction, you know, as an example. So when you feel that sense of expectations, what I recommend is actually make that a point of investigation. Make that be your entry point. Okay, I'm feeling impatient. What's my expectation right now? Okay, and like my friend Susie Harrington, she was teaching a month long, and she was saying that she was traveling someplace, and her friend was saying, you know, her phrase was basically, who said it had to be this way? You know, who said that it has to be this way? And who made that rule up? And that's that it's kind of pointing toward that expectation that we think life should be a certain way. Great. So start to notice that, because I would imagine you probably feel like your expectations are the most logical, the most well thought, the best way. If society matched your expectations, there'd be complete harmony. And
pretty much, yeah.
So when we have that, it's like we really invest in it. We really believe those expectations are true and valid, right? And that's part of that investigation. We start to realize, okay, maybe for me that might be true, it might be valid, and maybe it's a limited perspective. You know, maybe someone might have an equally diametrically opposed perspective that's equally valid. Right? So you start to explore that, because if you don't investigate that, this is one of the fetters, is that belief in our views, belief in our opinions, we're not going to be able to really open, to release. Yeah, so that's it sounds like that's your entry point, is to use impatience as a way to trigger that investigation into how I think things should be. And I would just articulate it, and maybe even to make it a little lighter, amp it up to a certain way so it's a little bit more ridiculous. Like people should always, always, always take their shoes off. It didn't matter if they're paramedics or, you know, firefighters. They should, you know, you can just kind of make it really almost ridiculous. You start to laugh at it. It starts to loosen that up a little bit. Or find someone who has a different opinion than you, different expectations. Say, tell me about why you think it's that way. I do this with my wife a lot, and it's like we just have different expectations based on how we were raised and our life events and different assumptions. And when you can start to realize that that's just a limited perspective, then you start to get a lot of inner freedom. And the good news is you can still apply those expectations, but you're able to match them much more accurately to how things are. You can realize that your set of expectations have a perfect match some of the time, but not all the time, right? And then you start to say, well, maybe this is one of those times. Let me see what happens. That's a voice of patience. Let me see what happens if we do this differently. You know, what happens if we, you know, load the dishwasher? Like my wife always loaded the dishwasher with the plates going one way. I did, or the bowls one way, I did the other way. And I always thought, well, she's doing it the wrong way. Why does she do it that way? And then one day it's like, this is actually much easier to unload it. So I started doing it that way. So part of it is just kind of questioning those deep beliefs. Yeah.
Really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. All right. Anyone else like to ask or share anything? Anyone online? All right. Aline?
Okay. Good evening, or I guess it's evening your side. My name's Aileen. I'm in Honolulu, and I'm enjoying this class very much. I have a lot to learn. And today I had a couple of experiences with impatience, in which one person thanked me for my patience, and I was a little surprised. I was patient with her, and I sympathized with what she was going through. She was holding up the line, basically, in the place where I was in line. And I realized there was nothing I could do about it, and there's nothing she could do about it. So I just, you know, said something sympathetic to her, and she said, thank you for your patience. And I suddenly realized that patience is not a feeling. I wasn't feeling particularly patient, but I was compassionate to the struggle she was having to get things moving with her, these four kids, you know, can't get kids moving, right? And so I was expressing patience, or, you know, she thanked me for patience that I didn't think I had inside, but it doesn't have to be inside, maybe. And then
I was impatient
with waiting for the plumber, because I couldn't leave here until the plumber came and I let him in. So I was like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, get here so I can get out of here. And, you know, the water's off. There's nothing I can do. I guess that's part of it, that I realized in both situations, there was really nothing I could do about the situation. I had no control over any of it. So the best thing to do was just accept that that I had no control. So those are just two situations that came up today. Thank you very much for your talk. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah, that realization that we don't have control, that there's nothing we can do about this moment. Like, you know, Deborah talking about being on I-5 coming up from Oregon, is like that something relaxes in us, something releases in us when we really acknowledge, okay, there's nothing I can do about this. And that's such an interesting, this is part of that I kind of slipped that in a talk about nature of control, because it brings up our control issues, that we want to control how the world looks, how lives look, how things manifest, and really we don't have that much control over things. I think that's why our minds are so busy, because we're trying to find the secret formula to make everything just the way we want it, but it never works, right? So we're always kind of worrying and chewing on it. And when there's moments like being in the line or waiting for the plumber, and we just take a breath and exhale, okay, I can't change this moment. We relax into it. And that's actually, that's a beautiful gateway into the Dharma. You know, can we relax? Okay, this is how this moment is. This is how things are in this set of conditions. It's like the conditions, the things that made this moment show up, they were set up a while back, right? You called the plumber, and the plumber said, okay, I'll be there at that time. And maybe he had another job, or she had anything come up, or, you know, all these conditions come together to the moment looking a certain way. Doesn't matter if it's external, other people, strangers, loved ones, or our own mind. It's like the conditions come together. When it arises, it can't be anything other than it is. You know, so how can we meet that? How can we open to that? And from that point, from that really deep acknowledgement, okay, this is how this moment is, that becomes the springboard to wise action. Like that sense of timing. Okay, when's the right time to do something? You know, when am I being too passive? When do I need to be more proactive? You know, so we start to learn the difference of that. But unless we connect fully to the moment, okay, this is how this moment is, we won't be able to see the pathway to something different. And that's coming from a different place than impatience. I think impatience, we could say, almost always is denying this moment. We're having struggle with how this moment is. And we're able to relax with how the moment is. That's when patience arises. Don't quote me on that. I might change my mind, but I think that is a good, it sounds right to me right now. Thank you for sharing those. All right, anyone else like to ask or share anything? Such a precious time to be able to talk and explore about the Dharma, about our lives, this way of meeting situations and circumstances.
Hi. This isn't a fully formed question or anything, but it just happens to be related to something I've really been focusing on lately, which is boredom. Yeah, I feel like there's a strong connection between impatience and boredom. Mm-hmm. And I find sometimes that, you know, maybe think about the situations I'm bored in, and there feels like there's maybe a disconnection to self. Like I want things to be, or maybe to the present moment, or I'm not sure, but I'm wanting to continually change things to make them more interesting. Which is weird, because if I just am meditating and focusing on doing nothing but breathing, a lot of times my attention is there. And it doesn't feel boring when I'm literally doing, you know, nothing. But I can be in these kind of mind states instead where it's, it feels like I have to change everything. I'm so bored. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on the connection with boredom and impatience?
Sure. Yeah, I think they are very connected. They can be very related. And it's interesting, you're talking about, you can be just simply meeting the breath and you're not really bored. And we could probably dissect that a little bit, and you're probably connected to the breath. You're sensing it, you're curious with it. Maybe you're enjoying that sense of settledness that's coming from that sense of kind of unity of mind, that sense of being present. Other times, like when we're just, there's so much other stuff going on and we're just bored, because sometimes boredom is kind of a cloak for a lot of other things, right? Sometimes it's irritation, sometimes there's something that's unmet with ourselves, or we're kind of like, maybe we're exhausted, we're burned out. So I think stepping back a little bit and just kind of taking stock, okay, what's I'm feeling bored. Okay, what does boredom actually feel like? Okay, can I locate a part of my body that's bored? Where does that actually, where is it located in a particular place? Okay, it's kind of in the head. It's kind of, I feel like that tension in my shoulders, like I want to get onto something better, right? Check out what the mind is saying. You know, mind's saying, okay, that's going to be a much better experience than this. I can't wait to get through this to get to there, because I know that's going to be so much more rich and full. And even though, you know, you may not know that for sure. So can notice what the tail of the mind is saying. Notice what the emotions are saying. You know, what does that feel like? That I'm trapped here. I can't get out of here. I just can't. I'm going to die from boredom. You know, feeling the emotional quality of that. Sometimes just kind of taking a real kind of honest inventory of everything, it starts to bring clarity. Because I think boredom is one of those states that has a lot of kind of unclarity baked into it, or it could say delusion, that we're not quite seeing things so clearly. And then sometimes when you do that, you realize, okay, boredom is actually masking this real valid need that I have. That maybe I've been talking to people all day, I need to go take a walk in the woods. It could be something like that. Or maybe I need to get some food in my body or drink some water or whatever it might be. Sometimes there's just a need that's not being met. Sometimes there's boredom it's an interesting thing to really explore, because sometimes it's aversion, like I know it's something I need to do. I'm procrastinating this. I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I don't want to have that difficult conversation. All those different things. So kind of just open the, kind of in a non-agenda way, look at it and see what's here, what's present.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Edmund, you'd like to go ahead?
Yes, I have this question about things that you just talked just before. So do you think that the root cause of all of this would be maybe biochemistry inside the human, you know, neural network, the brain? Because I see some dependencies here, like, for example, in the morning, you know, your attention and cognition works way different compared to, you know, different types of the day, different time of the day. So I'm trying to kind of trace back and find the causation here and find the root cause of all of this.
Sure. Yeah, so the question is around, you know, how much of this is around like brain chemistry and the different, you know, cycles we go through and the different influences that create brain chemistry one way versus another. And I'm sure that if we had a way of measuring, you know, in an easy way, the bored state or the impatient state, there'd be probably patterns of brain chemistry that would show up. So part of, but also at the same time, we can realize that interventions like taking a moment to practice or meditating for a half an hour also can shift those brain chemistries. So for myself, it's kind of like, what is my access point? How can I actually have some sense of power, or sense of agency in this? And brain chemistry, you know, it's harder for me to have a direct way of measuring that, but I can measure it. Change the way that we've been talking. How can I meet this moment experience in a different way? How can I open to this moment? Because even if there is this kind of dip in our brain chemistry or things are out of balance, the fact of the matter is the conditions have come together for that to be a certain way. What we have to do is learn to meet that, open to it, and see how can we work with it? How can we meet it the best way? Sometimes it is maybe doing something to help alter those chemistries through some, you know, particular food that might help us, or maybe more hydrated, or trying to decrease our stress. There's different ways of entry points, but unless we make contact, you know, I think we're going to be guessing. Thank you for your question. All right, anyone else? Maybe time for one more question. It's interesting, like, you know, waiting for if there's more questions. I could do that from a place of impatience. I could do it from a place of patience. Yeah, and on my better days, which is, this is not bad today, but there's a sense of simply just waiting for things to arise and to see, okay, what's this moment? Maybe there's just silence. Maybe there's a question. Like Ellie, go ahead, Ellie.
Hi there. One thing about when you say open your heart. I mean, I know the word open, and I know about not judging myself when I'm feeling impatient or not judging the other person. I have good self-esteem, but what does it mean to, what does love have to do with it? I guess that's the question. How does that love, and because when you say heart, it means love. So how does that enter into the perspective of patience?
Yes. So words like love and patience and opening the heart, you have to kind of look at how we're using those words. Like what does love have to do with it? Didn't Tina do a whole song on that? But anyway, I digress. Well, the way I would speak to that is that I would define, you know, love or a sense of kindness or open my heart as that actually connecting with, being in relationship with this moment or this other person, with how they actually are, to be able to kind of see through my agenda, my biases, my perspective, my was your word you used? Your expectations, you know, to actually see that, to see who is there, what their experience is like. This is really a helpful practice, because when we're impatient, there's a sense of our heart being a little closed or a lot closed to this other person, to this experience, to this situation. Like I can see it with driving, is like, it's so easy to have my heart closed to someone who's not driving as fast as I want to be driving in that moment. I can get hardened around that, and I get impatient. I'm running late. I'm going to be even later because of this person. But if you can step back and have, okay, let me feel all that, notice all that, that's the movement of the heart. That's the movement of love to connect with that. And at some point you realize, wow, this, if I was in that person's shoe, maybe I wasn't sure shoes, I wasn't sure where I was going, or I wasn't comfortable, or, you know, more hesitant. That's the pace that we'd be going. And that, you know, reflecting on myself, how I've been that way. So that's kind of that movement of the heart. So for me, again, the heart is about connecting. It's about kind of getting out of our own way, getting out of our heads, and actually the heart connection, which for me, that's an expression of love, is that willingness to connect. So that's what love has to do with it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How many people have that song in their head now? All right. That'd be a fun way. Each night we can end with a different song. Kind of get in your head. Okay. Thank you all. I hope you have a wonderful evening. Stay cool. It's nice and cool down here in the hall. All right. Be well.